Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
And we start another racing hour with a Mazda in race update. With pit stops going on in DPI, let's start at the other end of the timing screen in our five-class structure that we have, of course, this year. In GT Daytona, it is Nicholas Nelson for AF Corsa in the number 21 Ferrari that leads by 2.1 seconds. Andrea Caldarelli's just got into the Paul Miller Racing car and has just turned that car's fastest lap last time around, a 46.3. Not as quick as the fastest lap of the GTD race. That's a 45.7, and that has gone to the car that leads. Zachary Robichon is in the Pfaff Motorsport Porsche. He's another 8 seconds further back. He's got 2 seconds on Jan Halen for Wright Motorsports in the teal blue Porsche in fourth. Jack Hawksworth in fifth for the number 14 Lexus from Vassar Sullivan is another 10 seconds further back in the top five made up by Russell Ward for Wynnewood Racing. That number 57 car is another 11 seconds away from fifth position. In LMP3, Stephen McAleer, friend of the show and well-known groovy person, for Mueller Motorsports Duquesne, still leads in the number 6 car. Remember, that's come back from 4 laps down at the end of the first hour to lead from Sean Creech Motorsport by nearly a minute now, 56.57 seconds. And Oliver Askew is aboard the Riley Motorsports Leisure in 3rd. He's another minute and 38 back from João Barbosa, who is driving that Sean Creech Motorsport number 33 at the moment. In GT Le Mans, Corvettes are back at the front of the field. It's their turn to lead 1 and 2 again. They've been the recent competition car jumps up to second on the pit stops for a few laps. It's 3 from 4, Garcia from Tom Milner, 8 tenths of a second between them, so the bungee cord hasn't got any longer or shorter between those two Corvettes running around in lockstep. Ricci, as I say, about another 5.5 seconds further back. Then the two BMWs, they're 10 seconds further back and 3.5 seconds between them. In LMP2, Timothy Bourrier for Tower Motorsport, the number 8 in 8th position, has 21 seconds ahead of the Wynn Autosport Orica in 2nd. Then the Chetelaar Racing car is another minute and 15 further back. Just having pitted, actually, that car, Tonio Fueco is still behind the wheel. And Paul-Loup Chatin for Era Motorsport, also just out the pits, is 34 seconds further back. So that's another pit stop influenced standing right there at the moment. He managed to let everybody, I think, cycle through. So Kamui Kobayashi is leading now by 11 seconds over Renger van der Zander. That is the 48 Cadillac from the 01 Cadillac. Two of the lighter coloured cars out there. Konica Minolta Acura, the number 10 car for Alexander Rossi in third, is 5 seconds further back and has 22 and a half seconds on Philippe Nasr in the red and white number 31. And I'll quickly get down through Dane Cameron in fifth for Mearshank Racing, sixth Tristan Fortier, and all of those are on the lead lap. That is 65 seconds. And we've got a car stopped out at turn 5, which is the West Horseshoe. Shea Adam, what can you tell us?
On an out loop, Paul-Loup Chatin in the Era Motorsport LMP2 Orica is stopped on course at turn 5. This could bring out a full course caution if he does not get moved once again, but it's still showing up as stopped on track. So this could be not good news for some people out there and very good news for those who have just served their pit stops.
Yeah, let's see what happens as we've gone through that another race hour, under 16 hours to go now. Fabulous moon this evening back in the UK. Alan Prosser just stepped outside to what he calls the big fridge. That's the outside world outside the front door, he says, to get another adult beverage. You could read by the light of the moon where Alan is at the moment. Not quite full moon. We can't be far away. Very chilly across the UK this evening. thanks for staying with us at what is it, coming up to midnight at Daytona. That means coming up to 5 o'clock in the morning in the UK. Thank you for staying with us. Just
couldn't see the 18 car. We followed a couple of cars through the kink and through five into six, and the car was nowhere to be seen, and it didn't seem to be crawling either. So if he had stopped, he's managed to pull it off. There is actually another road sort of inside the two horseshoes. There's another inner road you can go into, which he may have pulled it into, which is makes it theoretically safe, but not quite sure how they rescue it without pulling out a caution.
Well, there are two gates there, actually. There's a gate, it's at the International Horseshoe, which is part of the old track, actually. So that's paved through the kink and down to... I'm having a quick look as we get a shot from the onboard on the Whelen Cadillac there. There's also an access gate to the left just before the right-hander at the West Horseshoe. And Felipe Nasr flashing his lights there at another prototype ahead, which wasn't Alessandro Rossi. So he's about to put a lap on somebody there. Dan Cameron in elegant isolation at the moment in the number five, in the fifth position in the number 60 car, with about 14 seconds between himself and fourth and 12 seconds between himself and fifth. It's an odd one. That race control have definitely put out the message that it's stopped at turn five. I was just going to say, has it turned another lap? That's the question.
So
yeah, the last lap around was 2 minutes and 37 seconds
in
length.
He's in the pits.
He did just bring it back into the pits, yes. Yeah.
So some problem on an out lap for Paul Loup-Chatin has dropped him out of the top places and down to sixth for the Aera Motorsport car. Now that could be something on an out lap, Shea, like a loose wheel perhaps, or some issue that they've had.
We've definitely seen that before. It would not be a surprise, but it does seem a bit strange that he definitely stopped at turn five, managed to continue, went past the pit lane and completed another lap and then brought it into the pit lane. So I think it's probably something a little bit more sinister than just an obvious loose wheel. I think it's probably something to do with a control alt delete needing to happen.
Yeah, he's done a restart in the car, and now it's still not clear whatever gremlin it is. So they'll go in, they'll either give him a quick steering wheel change and hope for the best, or it's the dreaded plug in the computer and go and look confused for 20 minutes.
One of the things that can happen when you come out of the pits, of course, is that the pit lane speed limiter fails to clear and you're chugging around in a very unpleasant manner, because race cars aren't meant to go slowly, even when you have to for safety reasons in the pit lane. It's exceptionally annoying to be on it for too long a time. It doesn't actually do the engine or the driveline that much good either. Cast your mind back, dear viewer and listener, a few years to Le Mans, when the resonance of being on the limiter behind the safety car actually caused a problem with, I think it was the carbon fibre drive shafts, wasn't it?
It was, the prop unwound shaft. It unwound the prop shaft, not the body's car, didn't it?
Yeah. That's a while back now, mind you. I've took that out of the Rolodex.
That's frightening, that one, because that's probably 10 years.
Isn't it funny how as you get older, time stretches and compresses, but with no apparent reason for what seems like 5 minutes ago and what seems like 20 years ago. And neither of them were the case. They were all about 3 years ago. You know, it's very odd. Very, very odd indeed. Well, what have we learned then, Shea and Nick, in the last 3 hours as we head in towards the witching hour at Daytona and Sunday morning beckons? And the first shift of the Sunday service will be the Reverend Johnny Palmer and his team coming back into the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. We've had a couple of decent long runs, over an hour and 20 minutes now on this one. And I'm not really seeing anybody dominating. It looks great for Kamui Kobayashi. He's pulled out 13 seconds on Renger van der Zander. Pit stops around the corner, though, Nick, and we've seen the Cadillacs at the front of the field with very different pace as they go through their stops. Kamui's been in, only been out for 9 laps, and Renger van der Zander for, let's see, 7. Six, so they've still got the majority of their stint to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say, and this is going to sound very negative, we haven't learned very much, to be honest, because, yeah, we still have, all right, the Mazda's a lap off, but the next yellow flag will get in. All 7 cars are in contention and are behaving differently at different times in the run, and don't forget, in how many hours now, 6 or 7 hours, it's going to be light for the last 8 hours of the race with the heat, and it's all going to change again. So, you know, and looking at GTLM, you know, that all the cars that didn't have an accident in the first lap are all within, you know, a few seconds of each other, and that'll continue going on. So I think it was great to get that, what, effectively 6 hours of running with a 1 yellow flag. But all it's taught us is these people know what they're doing. Well, now they've stopped having silly penalties, but I couldn't in any way put any particular car as a chance of winning, or more of a chance of meeting someone else, I say.
What about the other classes, Shea? LMP2 has been a battle of attrition, as Nick alluded to a few moments ago, the latest being that number 54 car. Are you seeing any patterns there? Do you see any favourites there?
No, being the short answer. LMP3 completely wide open. We've got a big gap between the number 6 Mjolnir Motorsports, Sean Creech, and then the first of the Rileys with Oliver Askew behind the wheel now. It's a big difference there, but again, we aren't convinced that they're going to keep going round and round like they are. Look at Core Autosport, possibly the best prepared out of all of the LMP3 cars, just given the dint that the team came off of running the factory Porsches the last few years. So they struggled with some brake issues. Who's to say it's not going to affect some of the smaller teams that are making their IMSA debuts in this race? And then in LMP2, it's anything but wide open. I mean, the 11 Wynn Autosport have kept their heads down. They've kept quiet, and they've driven a great race so far, but we're only 8 hours in. We're a third of the way through. I think everything is going to change before the end of this one.
The only one where I am seeing a bit of a pattern, Nick, is in GT Le Mans. You know, it only takes 2 cars for a race. All 5 cars are still relatively close since they were closed up with that last full course yellow. The 2 Corvettes do seem to be running to a plan, and they're staying about a second apart. It's 3 in front of 4 at the moment. The Ferrari goes by on a pit stop cycle for a few laps and splits them, and the 2 BMWs are another 10 seconds further back. But it does, I get the feeling that the Corvette have got something in reserve there if they were being pushed.
If you read like this, and obviously similar for the qualifying race, it does seem that the CAR does have a slight edge, but again, the temperature's going to go up. You don't know how that the BMW has been set or how the Ferrari is, but it's, yeah, if you had to put your house on a GTLM winner at this point, it would be Corvette, because they've managed to lead every single time relatively easily. And it's always the point that they know, particularly in GTLM, there is no point wearing your car out pulling out a lead with 16 hours to go. You may as well just have a comfortable few seconds and then worry about it again, as we said before, worry about it with 3 hours or 4 hours to go.
It is the Corvette way. I mean, they've ground out results before. Look, it's the 4th of July race here. They got that one spot on tactically, because it's not just about the pace of the cars, it's about the nous on the box as well. Through for another lap, the Ally Cadillac of Kenry Kobayashi, and the lead is a little over 13 seconds. 36.2 last time around, compared to a 35.1 for that car's best lap. This is good pace from Kamui, and it's consistent pace as well. Drops into the 37s only when there is traffic around. These are not the kind of drivers you see making huge mistakes, normally speaking. Next driver is up on the stand, suited and booted. Don't read anything into that. You tend to be ready just in case they need to come in. Tristan Fortier catching fifth position. Dane Cameron at the moment, number five Cadillac, and the number 60 Acura. I said Dane Cameron was having a quiet run, if you remember, not so very long ago. Well, 12 laps of that advantage that he had over Tristan, 12 seconds rather, has disappeared in 8 laps. And meantime, when I said don't read anything into the next 48 driver sitting on the box with helmet on, A, it's a bit warmer. B, you can probably plug in your radio and listen to what's going on somewhere. But C, Kamui Kobayashi's still got half his stint to do in this one. So he, maybe 15, 20 minutes as much as still to run in that car. So forewarned is forearmed. Yeah, 13 laps. So he's got another 7 or 8 laps before he comes in. I'd also say these times as well, having your race helmet on, which is a perfect fit to your head, and your race balaclava, is a great way to keep your social distancing as well. You're in your own bubble, you don't have to wear a mask because you've got a carbon fibre one in front of your face, and of course you've got the balaclava as well. I always liked to get ready nice and early because there's nothing worse than having to rush around and find your earplugs, or worse still, get ready and on as you realise that the car's coming in that lap, you realise that you haven't put your earplugs and your radio buds in your ear, and you've got to take your helmet and your hands device and everything off, find them and put them in your ear.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
No.
It's bad enough just with all the plain earplugs when you're getting on a motorbike, let alone you actually talk to the pits in a racing situation.
Kobayashi begin to stretch his legs. Fastest lap for that car, 34.918. Last time around, Johnny Palmer is getting ready to take you into Sunday morning, just a couple of minutes before midnight. Welcome back to the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, JP. We've had another decent long run, and I think we've decided that other than GTLM, pretty much there's no real rhyme or reason, and certainly no big patterns that we want to pull out of this. Next 3 hours could be pivotal, often are, as we go into Sunday morning, JP.
Yeah, it's definitely a milestone in the race, isn't it? And I think treated as such by many of the teams as well. You've done well to last this far, and we've still got 3 hours and 40 minutes there or thereabouts to go till half distance. And yeah, just to be able to make it into Sunday morning is often tricky, particularly to get there without anything happening to your car.
I mean, that is the way to break up 24-hour races for the teams as well as for us. You know, midnight will be a milestone. Half distance will be a milestone for these race teams, Johnny.
It will. And then there are... You kind of focus on, you know, moments ahead that are many hours away, and then all of a sudden you're brought right back into the present moment, as Alexander Rossi was just then, with two GT Daytona cars right in front of him out of turn two, and he had to squeeze between an Aston Martin and the concrete wall to driver's left. So you can't afford to be thinking too far into the future for risk of losing exactly what you're doing on that lap, on this particular lap in this moment. So he's through that hairy period of time is Rossi, and now up onto the banking and heading for the tri-oval once again. Race is led by Kamui Kobayashi, as John has mentioned. 134.918, his best lap so far. Renger van der Zande in the chasing Cadillac is 17 seconds away. And then you got the chasing number 10 car of Alexander Rossi that he shares with Elio Castroneves, Felipe Albuquerque in the lineup there, as well as Ricky Taylor. and there are more GT Daytona cars just around the corner of the International Horseshoe. So got into a little bit of clear air, and now that's gone again. So working his way around the second of the horseshoes on the infield with two Lexus, actually, I make it. Yeah, they've taken on a completely different look overnight. So one with the blue roofline illuminated brilliantly, and one with the red. Actually, they're more easy to tell apart at night than they are in the daytime, although there's subtle sponsorship differences between the 12 and the 14 cars. Again, three abreast on the back straight for Alexander Rossi. Now, has he got any concern immediately behind him and distraction therefore? Not really. Felipe Nasr is on the same lap in the 31 Wheel and Engineering Cadillac, but a good 24 seconds away, so he can fully focus on the road in front. And it's relatively clear for him now, heading through turn number four, Speedway turn four, and back to the start-finish straight. Wynn Autosport leading the LMP2 category. Now, driving that 11 car is Thomas Morel in the leading Orica, and Gabby Aubry over a minute away. So again, Wynn Autosport in a reasonably comfortable position. There's then Antonio Fuoco in the Dallara for Cetila Racing, running in third place. So Jeremy Shaw coming back to the broadcast once again, joining me, Johnny Palmer, in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. We are past midnight. It's now Sunday morning, Jeremy, and it's just a few more minutes into the book, but psychologically it's a big hurdle that these teams have reached now.
It is indeed, Johnny, and this is always, for me, a tremendous part of the race. A bit after midnight, next couple of hours or so, are always really, really interesting, I find. And, this has been a fascinating race so far. It's been that super stint by Kamui Kobayashi there. Just turned his best lap, that car's best lap of the race, just three or four laps ago in the dark of night. Very, very impressive. And he's extended his lead over the number 01 car of Renger van der Zande. It's now out to over 15 seconds. And before this round of pit stop, before the last round of pit stops, which was about 13 laps ago, 12, 13 laps ago, the gap was 7 seconds. So it's more than doubled in this run for Kobayashi, extending his lead. Alexander Rossi hanging nicely there in the third position. Felipe Nasr is up into fourth again now, number 31 car. Seems to be running a good bit better than it was kind of earlier in the late evening, so to speak. I'd say we're definitely night time now after midnight. Dane Cameron has been slipping back in fifth position in car number 60. That's the Meyer Shank Racing Acura. And I just put a note in to the team, and Dane Cameron indeed is double stinting a set of tyres right now. So that would explain why he's losing just a little bit of time. And he is coming under pressure now from Tristan Vautier, who that number five car, you might remember, had a drive-through penalty for jumping the restart. When was that, an hour or so ago? Maybe it was more than that now, an hour and a half ago, I guess. And that since then, he has been struggling to make up that time. But Vautier now pretty much on the tail, actually is on the tail of Dane Cameron. So they are now battling for fifth and sixth positions. They are the last cars on the lead lap, because Oliver Jarvis is still one lap down in that number 55 Mazda. That was a car that ran super, super well in the early stages, Johnny, but has been struggling a bit quite recently. They also had a drive-through penalty earlier for speeding in the pit lane. That was very, very early on, so that's not really a factor. But more significant was the fact that they missed the opportunity during that most recent caution period to get their lap back. There was a miscommunication between the pit lane and the driver, and he came in a lap too soon, and that effectively negated any possibility of getting back onto the lead lap. So a bit of a mistake there from Mazda. Plus, I hear the car's not running quite as nicely, not handling quite as nicely as it was early on. But, this is overnight, much cooler now, In the daytime, it could be much better. I'm sure there will be some more four-course cautions before then. We've got this run's now been, what, an hour and a half or so, Johnny, hasn't it, under green flag right now?
Yeah, I can check the information on that. You're bang on. Actually, an hour and
6:48, yeah.
Yeah. So, again, a good spell. We managed to get to almost 4 hours on the previous green. The yellow in between was pretty much 20 minutes. So that was the full caution period, which allowed both sets of cars, prototypes and GTs, to make their pit stops. Average times would favour Kamui Kobayashi in this 19-lap stint. It's 19 laps old at this point. He's managing to just about do a 136.0 on average. And looking back to Renger van der Zander's times, at 136.8 across his 15 laps. You're right to draw attention to Dane Cameron, though, who is slower than that, but we know the reasons why, and good investigative work there by Mr. Jeremy Shaw to find out that Dane having to use the same set of tyres again. Risking possibly being caught by Tristan Vautier, therefore, in the recovering number five car. And he's right on his tail, isn't he, now, having said that. There's that little bit of time that's being gobbled up by Tristan Vautier with every single lap. And we've got a real battle on our hands now between the 60 and the five cars for fifth and sixth places. It's Jeremy Shaw and Johnny Palmer in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre, and dealing with the VP Racing Fuels Pit and Paddock reports is Joe Bradley.
Evening, gentlemen. Or should I say good morning?
Only just, but yes, you should.
Yeah, you know what? It's
evening
this time,
for me.
It's this time of this race, guys, that I think these drivers really show their class and show why they're the best drivers, sports car drivers in the world. We expect them, and we take it for granted that they're just going to churn out the laps and keep on just going round without any incident, and they really are. And we're in the realms now of just stretching that tyre life to the max. And we've seen now Kobayashi, for instance, in the leading Ally Cadillac Racing number 48, he did a 15 lap stint, which was then followed up with a 22 laps, 21 laps, 20 laps. We look at the car behind them in number one. We had Scott Dixon earlier. His stints were punctuated by a short 10-lap stint, but after he took over the car from Kevin Magnussen, just on the about lap 142, we saw Scott do 22 laps. We saw Scott do another 22 laps, and then we saw another 22 laps. Then we had that short stint because of the yellow. He did 10. He's back out. He extended that one to 24 before he brought that number 01 car in and gave that car over to van der Zander. But this is the kind of thing that puts these guys out there, and it's the difference between the guys at the front, the guys in the DPIs especially, which I've just used as an example there. We see them going round and round and round, and what we kind of take for granted is that they're all of this time, they're hitting their marks, they're hitting their apex, they're pressing that brake pedal at their marks, and they're keeping those cars on the track as best they can at such fantastic speeds. And if they slip up in the slightest, they know that even at this stage with 15 and a half hours remaining, the race can they can lose sight of that race, they can lose a grip on this race. It's that tight even at this stage. It's incredible, this race.
It is relentless, and particularly in these long spells of green, there's sort of nowhere to hide, really, because even the odd lap that is a second or so slower than it should be, it's very easy to spot that, and not only by your own team but all those that you're competing with as well. And chinks in the armour like that will readily be observed by teams, and most often exposed as well. So you've got to stay in the hunt as much as possible, that crucial lead lap, as always. Another pit caller then is the Ally sponsored car, the Ally Cadillac Racing machine of Kamui Kobayashi from the race lead. Renger van der Zander stays out and therefore becomes the new race leader again. And so the lead margin back to Alexander Rossi, who also stays out in the number 10 Acura, is now down to 13 seconds. But that radical paint scheme on the Ally car, the white, the pink and the purple, looking great underneath the floodlights as it heads down pit road. and already some tyre temperature being sought by, I assume, Kobayashi staying at the wheel. I was watching tyres being changed, so they'll be stone cold. Do you reckon it was a driver change there, Jeremy?
Well, we saw some video of Jimmy Johnson, I think it was, on the pit wall about 15 minutes or so ago, to wait and see until when the timing clicks over. Kamui is he's been at the wheel of this car for quite a long time now. He's been at the wheel for 2.5 hours. Indeed, yes, it's just clicked over. So it is Jimmy Johnson now at the wheel of what was the leading car prior to this round of pit stops. The gap from the 48 to the number 01 car was about 18 seconds on the lap before Kamui Kobayashi brought that car onto pit lane. So now the 7-time NASCAR champion is back out into the race for his second, they're running through the second rotations now. So Jimmy did a good long stint early on to start this race, and now back at the wheel of that number 48 car, and it's exactly where he would want it to be, isn't it? In the lead.
And very, very different conditions as well. But he's no stranger to night racing, with so much NASCAR experience under the floodlights. And I suppose deliberately the team didn't give him the stint where you go from day into night, but there was also opportunity to practice, I think an hour and 45 minutes free practice three on Thursday night, so ample opportunity to get the required laps in order to qualify for the race. You have to have done those, but also a few extra where possible, just to get properly acclimatised to, I said, a lack of light. There never really is a lack of light around this place compared to other tracks around the world that do twice around the clock races, but it's about also where you run the risk of being blinded, not only by the floodlights themselves, but also returning cars on the infield, for instance, that the lights designed for the race cars to be as bright as possible. There's no option for a dipped headlight that you would have on a street car here. And when you get cars returning from the Western Horseshoe and you're motoring on into there, there's always the chance of lights just momentarily blinding you, disorientating you, and it's about being used to that and ready for it when it happens. So the Ally car now hitting the curb perfectly through turn six, and again on the outside of the exit of that corner up onto the high banks will go Jimmy Johnson. But the Renger van der Zander driven Chip Ganassi Cadillac now leads, with the chasing car that was Alexander Rossi coming into pit road and being serviced. So the Wayne Taylor guys, the Konica Minolta Acura team, descend upon it. There's a windshield tear-off removed, and the fuel is still going in. The tyre change is done, well, relatively sedately, but remember it was on this car that they had the hiccup on the rear right. Sedately because it's the fuel that generally takes the longest time, and therefore everybody else can perform their duties in a fairly chilled-out manner, but that wasn't the case on one of the stops for the rear right corner, because the car was lowered far too early before the personnel on the rear right had completed the job. But they've come back from that slight hiccup and running just 3 seconds prior to that stop from the Dane Cameron car number 60, which streams across the line now actually to produce a 3-second lead. Rossi will take a bit of time to get up to speed as well, depending on how old those Michelin tyres are. I understand it's only Dane Cameron, or was only Dane Cameron, that was needing to nurse his car on older tyres. Mustang sampling 5 car is in as well. So Tristan Vautier, who was pushing hard on the tail of Dane Cameron, has come in for his 15th stop. As in GTLM, it's a Corvette that continues to lead, but a wave of pit stop for the other 4 cars has jumbled up the order a touch. So Ferrari from Risi Competizione is in the pit lane. John Edwards in his black BMW number 24 is also down pit road, but Tonio Garcia rejoining. Timo Glock in the red BMW team RLL M8 rejoining the racetrack as well. I'd expect, therefore, Tommy Milner to pit next time around. Interestingly, though, He's only made 8 stops. Yes, he owes us 1, but there are other cars that have made as many as 11 now, the Ferrari and the BMW, for instance. So was it that they took advantage of stopping under cautions more so than the four car? I mean, it's not unusual to see the car with the least amount of stops leading the class, but I hadn't realised that even at this stage of the race to see a difference of, well, it will be 2, won't it? 8 to 9 to 11 stops. So a firm advantage for the silver Corvette. The sister machine is on about the same sort of schedule, running in fourth place for Tonio Garcia, car number 3. This place loses none of its atmosphere at this time of night. And if you have headed to imsaradio.com to click on the live video tab, then hopefully you're enjoying our audio perfectly synced with the visuals live from the World Centre of Racing. And they overhead shots just never lose any of their majesty to see the cars at great distance, but very close to one another, just pounding out the laps, and you get an idea of the scale of this place. It's an awesome oval track when used by NASCAR, but equally so, just as competitive and awe inspiring when the infield is in action as well. A pit stop for the 0-1, Jeremy Shaw, from the race lead.
Indeed, 285 laps completed there by that car. 22 lap stint for Renger van der Zande. That's a pretty standard for that car. The number 5 car, Tristan Vautier, we talked about him pushing hard to catch up with Dan Cameron during his stint. 21 lap stint for the number 5 car. The number 60 is finally in now on lap 285. So that's a 22 lap stint also for Dane Cameron. I'm pretty sure he will be very grateful for some new tyres this time around. He managed to hold his position ahead of the number 5 car. We'll have to wait and see now whether the fact that number 5 was able to get out a couple of laps ago, it's 2 laps ago that that car made its pit stop, whether it's able to make up some ground before the number 60 car gets back up to speed.
Yeah, and it's about trying to be quicker on pit road and then taking advantage of the car that has stopped later but is on cooler tyres and scrabbling for grip when the car behind us has had a couple of laps already to build the temperature, and hopefully for the chasing car can pick the rejoining car off. But it's never quite as simple as that. There's a bit of a queue developing now on the infield, not for the first time in this race. An LMP2 car needing to be overtaken by the 31 Wheel and Engineering machine. Not going to do it into the kink at turn 4, so we'll need to wait maybe for the braking area into 5, and the 31's going to have to go around the high side. I want to say that's the 11 car. Yes, it is, as the leading LMP2 machine. I thought I could see the lone digit, number 1, illuminated as its positional light, and Thomas Merrill for Wynn Autosport goes a touch wide deliberately to allow car 31 through. So Mike Conway lost a short amount of time there and takes to the high banks once again. In GT Daytona, Matteo Cressoni, I remember him siding through the order in the Daytona class in my last shift. The AF Corsa Ferrari wasting no time at all and keeping at an arm's distance Corey Lewis now for Paul Miller Racing's Lamborghini Huracan. Jan Halen for the Wright Motorsports team, that's a Porsche, running in third, and a Lexus fourth. So again, 4 different manufacturers in that top 4. Aaron Tielitz for Vasa Sullivan then makes up the top 4 positions in car 14. And Conway now confirmed into fourth place because of the pit stopping Dane Cameron, now rejoining, and Conway, I guess on that lap, has managed to pick him off as predicted. So Wheel and Engineering back into the top 5. Also past Dane Cameron is Tristan Vautier. So all that pressure in the earlier stint finally results in success for Mustang Sampling, up to 5th place and crucially ahead of Dane Cameron. But you have to think Dane is on some slightly better tyres this time and therefore in a position to offer a response during the next stint. So this could get very tasty over the next half an hour or so. Joe, I suppose that sometimes you've got to take your medicine at various points in this race. If you are going to be double stinting tyres restricted in this race, as they always are, and you know, sometimes you're going to be in a good place regarding Michelin rubber, as in a brand new set. Sometimes you've got to just live with a rather tired set beneath you.
It's always the balancing act, isn't it? It's about optimising your run, but also managing your tyres. And the person on the pit wall at Mazda, Lena Gade, she has that saying of push without risk. And it really is that. And where you can make up the time is by siding through the traffic and timing your move through the traffic, not getting held up at all. But it's once you start really having to push those tyres, that's when things can kind of come back to haunt you. And you can save a bit of time in the pit stop by just fueling. And we can change the tyres at the same time as fueling. But it's still, you know, it still shaves off those few seconds in the pit stop. We talk all the time, Johnny, don't we, about, you know, if you lose time in the pits, it takes an absolute age to make that time back up out on the track. So if we can shave time in the pits to a minimum, then we are going to gain track time. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing these tyres being double, triple, and sometimes even quadruple stinted at times.
Yeah, you're fighting for tenths of seconds out on the racetrack, yeah. And very easily a slip up in the pit stop can cost you whole seconds. And we saw, I think, 10 of them evaporate for the 10 car when they made that slight error on the rear. Jeremy reminds me that it's 38 sets for the DPI class that you get, and that is for the entire race week. Now, is there a division anywhere in the regulations that says you need to use some of those 38 in practice, or is it entirely up to you, Jeremy?
Yeah, you can use them however you like, but that does cover all the practice. Not qualifying now, because that was last weekend, but all of the practice sessions, of which there were four leading up to this race. So, yes, that is the allocation for the entire week. So, you know, they'll be making, more. They can't put fresh tyres on at every pit stop. That's the bottom line here. So there are times in the race where you're going to, where you are going to have to double stint, and obviously you want to get those out of the way early on, because you will for sure want fresh tyres every new stint for the final several hours of the race.
The one thing I had noticed, though, is that the stint we think Dane Cameron was on older tyres, it wasn't him in the previous stint. So think that those are tyres from an earlier Dane Cameron stint that then been the other side of the wall, cooled down a little bit, and then reapplied to car 60 later on?
Well, good point. I didn't see whether they changed tyres on that pit stop, but I admit it would probably be unlikely that they wouldn't have changed tyres during that. But then again, it was AJ Allman that got out of the car. If AJ said the car was working fine on that set of tyres, maybe that would have been all it needed for him to stay out there. So don't honestly know. But I did ask the question, and I was told that he was double stinting.
Yeah, it's just from experience at Le Mans, double stinting can be literally keep the same tyres from one stint to the next. And then other times they do this clever thing where they actually take tyres off and they go through a completely separate heat cycle and are designed to do that as well, which is an incredible bit of tyre wizardry, really. Because you're taking various layers off the tyres and still there is performance beneath. But that is the modern day tyre technician, Joe. And, you know, at LMP1 level, which we've now lost, and we go into hypercar era in the World Endurance Championship. But in the days, let's say, when the WEC had Audi and Porsche and Toyota, each manufacturer had its own tyre technician. And they were looking at the tyre wear and how it behaved on each individual car, and also looking at this heat cycle element as well.
And you know what, Johnny? The back of the pits, the pit side of the pit wall, the other side of the pit apron, I should say, it's a never-ending sort of stream of activity behind there. It's like rush hour, pretty much constantly, the whole of this 24-hour race, where you see tyres being coming off the car. Now, please don't imagine that once the tyres are taken off the car, they're just left in the corner to cool down. They're taken back to the garage, to the awning, where they're redressed and they're inspected. They'll be minutely inspected for cuts and abrasions and bits of wear that are really going to put a big question mark on that particular tyre. Also, they'll be put under a heat gun, and you'll take the layer of pickup off, which is basically, as the slick tyre is used, the rubber melts, and some of that rubber peels off and just ends up on the track. And cars behind will then come along and pick that rubber up, and it's called, we call that pickup, if you've ever heard that being referred as pickup. Well, when the tyre comes off the car, it sometimes has layers of rubber that really don't belong there. So you redress the tyre and go through that inspection phase and check how much tread is on that tyre. Because even though they're a bald tread pattern, there's still a layer of there's a level and amount of rubber that is called the tread on that tyre. And there'll be wear indicators within on the surface of the tyre that will tell the tyre technician just how much rubber is left on that tyre. And the tyre technician will make a decision as to whether that tyre can then be recycled back into the program of the car. It may even be that when we get back to the morning or the pit garage, as it is, we kind of cycle through and mix and match sets of tyres that have come off the car. This is what you can't mix and match tyres from different cars in your team. It's got to be from the same car. But it's nothing stopping you using the two rears and the two fronts for a completely different run to then go back on the car for a later stint. And this is a constant. It's a constant machine. It's behind the scenes. We think that, you know, a motor race is all about the guy and the girl behind the wheel. It's not. It's a fully complete team effort. And when times are better, if you ever get a chance to get to this race and spend some time behind the pit wall, behind the pit garages, up against the fence, and just see the hive of activity that's going on. It really does remind me of a beehive. So a hive of activity is probably the right term to use.
Yeah, worker bees all doing their own stuff, but it's about also, it's all about everybody knowing each other's roles, trying not to get in each other's way, but it becomes a little bit like clockwork, I suppose. There is a real science to it, though, as well, and every team will be doing that. Particularly important in the DPI category, though, with heavily restricted tyres. I mean, all categories are, and then it's a question of making sure you don't lose track on your spreadsheet as to which tyres need to be where. The fourth-placed Porsche, Zachary Robichon, is just heading out of the first couple of corners. Pfaff Motorsports Porsche with its trademark tartan livery, sort of half and half shared with the silver rear on that car for this year. And again, some green LED lights that make it easy to pick out. It's being chased by Aaron Tielitz in the Vassar Sullivan Lexus. Although, having said that, I think Robichon's just made the move on Tielitz to grab fourth position away from the Lexus, which will put two 911s now into the top four. Best of the two, Lexus is therefore fifth. And then we got an Aston Martin for Richard Westbrook, the Vantage number 97, down in the 146.7, so able to lap at a similar speed to Tielitz and Robichon for that matter as well. So they're motoring on at an even pace, but the problem for Westy is he's got about half a minute to break down before he can be involved with the scrap for fourth position. But it's still Matteo Cressoni for AF Corsa leading the class by nearly 18 seconds over Corey Lewis. And of the 19 GT Daytona starters, just the one car that is out of the race, I make it, or certainly shown as stopped. Now, we had confirmation earlier on that three LMP2 cars had retired, and I'm assuming from the current state of the screen, Jeremy Shaw, that Franck Pereira's GRT Grasser car is out of the race, or is it that it's just behind the wall receiving some work? Car 19.
That 19, that was the one that had the the what looked like a fire at on the end of, at the back straight. That was some while ago. I think that car has been retired. So I don't think we're going to be seeing that car again. It looked a bit terminal. Let's put it that way.
I see. I can picture that. I think we've had dramas more so in the pit lane in the past with a Lamborghini or two catching fire. The 49 starters that we had has now become 45 runners in the race then, but reasonable distance into the race and a small amount of attrition, but maybe not as much as in previous years. Let's hope we can keep it that way for as long as possible. Sally Jolich now rejoining the race in the RWR Eurasia Ligier. He's in the LMP2 class, running in car 51. And Sally Jolich sharing that car with Sven Muller and Cody Ware and Austin Dillon. If you recognise the name of Sally Jolich, though, then he's a regular, has been a regular runner with TF Sport, with Charlie Eastwood and Darren and Johnny Adam as part of Tom Ferrier's team in the WEC, and prior to that was in the European Le Mans Series. So getting more experience now with probably his first drive in a prototype, or continuing his week at Daytona behind the wheel of these high downforce cars. Exciting times for Sally Jolich and where his career may go to next, as the race is led by Jimmy Johnson in the number 48 car. And Jimmy just heading out of turn two, through the kink at 2A, the right and the left, and now onto the brakes into the first of the horseshoes on the infield. And Jimmy's car that was earlier driven by Kamui Kobayashi remains at the front. Therefore, we've had the cycle of the latest pit stops, and Jimmy trying to nurse this 3-second lead, but Renger van der Zander not hanging around in his wheel tracks, found about 6/10 of a second on the race leader on that one lap alone. So there's another gap that is starting to come down, Jeremy.
Yes, indeed. On that last pit stop, the number the 01 car changed only two left side tyres on the Chip Ganassi Racing entry car number 01, Renger van der Zander. He's now running he's made two pit stops. This is, he's got triple stint here for Renger, which is about normal for these guys these days. But hats off here to Jimmy Johnson, who came out of the pits with about a lead of about, around about 5 seconds, 4.5 seconds. It's come down to maybe three, but that's pretty darn good going for somebody who really doesn't have a lot of experience, hardly any experience in this sort of a car. Of course, he's also done a fair bit of testing over the winter to prepare for his partial IndyCar campaign with the Chip Ganassi Racing team. So he's got, he's getting used to downforce cars. And Jimmy also, to get prepared for these completely different sort of cars he's driven for the most part of his career, of his stellar career, has also been getting a lot of time in a Formula regional car as well, the American F3 series. He's been driving one of those cars and getting a lot of miles in, just pounding around and getting used to a much lighter car than the stock car. And this car's got a pretty good weight to power ratio, just to become more familiar with the surroundings of the single seaters.
Yeah, and we've got a number of drivers that are getting used to slightly different disciplines of the sport this weekend, whether they be drivers that are far more used to GT cars, making the adjustment to perhaps their first prototype drive. And Jimmy's kind of in the same boat. I mean, hugely experienced on the big ovals and the short ovals as well in NASCARs. But as you say, those cars, although they do have a little bit of dependency on aero, nowhere near the sort that the 48 car that has. And the confidence that you must show going into the medium and high-speed corners, because that invisible hand that pushes down on the car to give you all the extra grip is not necessarily there unless you've had massive experience of it. So you've got to have faith that it'll help you turn in every single corner, and the faster you go, the more you'll gain the grip. But he will know that full well, and impressive that he's adjusted to it so quickly. We are going to have a battle on our hands, though, no doubt about it, with the more experienced Renger van der Zande now just a second away from the NASCAR start. Alexander Rossi 17 seconds away, but not able to lap. Well, it was a slower lap, wasn't it, for Alexander Rossi that time around, a 138.8. Caught some traffic, no doubt, when the two cars ahead of him, one is in the 137s, the other is sub-136. And Mike Conway able to produce about the sort of pace on the last lap as the race leader is doing as well. So Rossi maybe into a phase where got older tyres on that car as well, with the Acura that is in third place far outpacing its not quite the sister car, but a similar machine from Meyer Shank Racing, the Acura DPI for car number 60. But Dane Cameron should be in as a happier mould now, with newer tyres beneath him, and he's only 0.3 seconds on the tail of Tristan Vautier now. So we have got potentially a role reversing here. Vautier was doing the chasing in the previous stint. Now Cameron looking for an opportunity to get by, and likewise stonking battle for the lead as well, with out of the international horseshoe. That's the scrap for fifth and sixth that I've mentioned between Tristan Vautier and Dane Cameron, and the battle for the lead is down to just 1.3 seconds now. We've got to have eyes everywhere, as is always the case at the Daytona 24 Hours, Jeremy Shaw. Several battles all happening together.
Indeed so. Those two overall leaders working their way through the GTLM leading pair as well. That's the two Corvettes. Antonio Garcia now in the number three car is ahead of the number four. They've been separated by not very much for most of this race. It's number three ahead of number four, with the two long-time stalwarts of this Corvette racing team, Antonio Garcia and Tommy Milner, driving at the moment. But Davide Rigon is at the wheel of number 62, Risi Competizione Ferrari. That was a car you might remember that was called for a penalty earlier, an incident at the bus stop called for incident responsibility, a drive-through penalty. But that car remains only about 11 seconds off the lead. And then the two BMWs are running in lockstep also, about another dozen seconds further back down the road, number 24 of John Edwards, just ahead of his teammate Timo Glock. So at this stage in the race, with coming up to 9 hours down, still we've got five cars having a tremendous battle in GTLM.
Yeah, and with just
by the way,
the
number 79, the Porsche, had that big problems, of course, early on in this race. It's still running well now. Kevin Estra is driving that car at the moment. It's in 37th position overall, and is about a dozen laps, 12, 13 laps off behind the other cars in GTLM. That's going to be a tall order to make up that. It is possible, if there's a lot of caution periods. We thought the big early part of this race, there were going to be an awful lot, but then we've had two pretty long periods of green flag running. So that certainly is not playing to the benefit of that Porsche. But the Porsche is running well, and it has set the fastest lap of the race in GTLM a good bit earlier in the proceedings. And that time was set by Kevin Estra, who's at the wheel of the car right now.
So it's midnight 38 in Daytona, and that means with almost 9 hours completed, we are not very far away from another hour being ticked off in the race. Time, therefore, for a Mazda in-race update right here on RS2 IMSA Radio. You're tuned to the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre with myself, Johnny Palmer, and Jeremy Shaw, together with Joe Bradley, looking after the VP Racing Fuels pit and paddock updates. Jimmy Johnson leads with the Cadillac DPI car number 48. He's not very far away from completing 300 laps, by the way, for the Ally Cadillac Racing team. Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing are in second place and within a second now of the race leader Renger van der Zande in car 01. Third is the 10 of Alexander Rossi for Konica Minolta Acura, and the Whelan Engineering Cadillac of Mike Conway running in fourth place, car 31. Then it's Tristan Vautier and Dane Cameron completely together and having to deal with traffic, and also Dane Cameron looking for an opportunity to get by at every turn of the course. So 5 and 60 nose to tail for 5th and 6th, and in 7th place it's the 55 Mazda Motorsports DPI for Harry Tinknell. LMP2 is led by Wynn Autosport in their Orica for Thomas Merrill in the number 11 machine. Gabby Obrey for Tower Motorsport is in 2nd place at nearly just over 50 seconds is the lead margin in LMP2, with Andrea Bellicchi in the 47 Cetelar Racing Dallara running in 3rd. GTLM is led by two Corvettes, Tonio Garcia and Tommy Milner. 1.6 seconds separate the 3 and the 4 C8Rs. Then it's the Risi Competizione Ferrari of Davide Rigon, 62. John Edwards and Timo Glock, both in BMWs from the same team, Team RLL, are 4th and 5th, 24 ahead of 25. LMP3 is led by the 6 car, which has driving it Stephen McAleer, the Scotsman, ahead of João Barbosa for Sean Creech Motorsport. It's Mulner Motorsports, by the way, and they're Duquesne that leads the class. Oliver Askew in the 74 Riley Motorsports Ligier is 3rd. And in GT Daytona, a Ferrari, a Lamborghini, a Porsche and a Lexus. How's that for a top 4? AF Corsa lead it with Matteo Cressoni, car 21. Corey Lewis is 2nd, car number 1. Paul Miller Racing. Jan Halen 3rd for Wright Motorsports, car 16. And Aaron Tielitz for Vassar Sullivan in the number 14 Lexus. Another race hour is completed. So really not that very far to go now. Of course there is. There is another 15 hours remaining on the clock. You're tuned to RS2 IMSA Radio.